Hello and welcome to the Clare Valley Podcast, brought to you by the Clare and Gilbert Valleys Council, keeping you informed on the latest council news, upcoming projects and community events in the area. I'm your host, Annabelle Homer. Big win for the youth of Clare this month. The Clare Bike Park has been given a major facelift. It's been 18 months in the making. Now there's bigger jumps, better tricks, and the kids couldn't be happier.
I love it. Like, compared to what used to be here, it's just so much better.
Pretty stoked. Looks pretty cool and, yeah, excited.
Now we've got this incredible track 18 months later, which is just amazing.
And an exciting development for the community of Auburn. After 4 years of planning, a very impressive and giant sculpture has been erected at the entrance of the township.
I love it. I love it. You know, I mean, there isn't anything like it.
But first, to our monthly chat with the CEO of the Clare and Gilbert Valleys Council, Helen McDonald. This month, we catch up on plans for a mobile library service, delays in design costings for the Clare and Riverton Town Halls, and upcoming NAIDOC celebrations. But first to Auburn, and it's on the verge of a makeover. The Clare and Gilbert Valleys Council has been working with the Auburn community to develop a new streetscape plan, with the focus being on the main street and the heritage precinct of St Vincent Street. Here's Helen McDonald.
Yes, it is very exciting. So we've finished, I suppose, the first phase of working with the community to design the streetscape for Auburn.
When you say you're going to beautify the street, is it just putting a canopy of trees along the side of the street? Is that what it's involved?
There's quite a lot more. There's sort of can be extended curbing and certainly plantings, little spots for people to sit, all of those things that makes it a better environment for pedestrians and also just the visual appeal of it to enhance, particularly in Auburn, the historic nature.
It's only a draft plan at this stage and it's open for public consultation throughout January, I understand, December and January?
That's correct, yes.
And so people can get access to this plan online. There's plans for a drop-in session in Auburn at some stage during January.
Yes, it will be towards the end of January, early February. So we'll have a day where the community can drop in, have a look at the plans, talk to the designers and provide their feedback that way.
Speaking of community consultation, a mobile library service is being flagged as a possibility.
Yes, this was something that was actually a concept proposed by one of our councillors probably at least 12 months ago, which I cottoned onto and thought, wow, that is a really good idea to increase people's access to our library service, because we've got numerous communities, 15 or so, across the district, but we have a library in Clare, a library in Saddleworth, and a community library in Riverton. So if people don't have access to a vehicle or whatever, then they don't necessarily have access to a library service. And so we put up a proposal as part of the budget process for this year, and council liked the idea, but they rightly said we should really go out to the community and see if there is significant community support for it. So that's what we're doing at the moment.
And 21st of January is the closing date for that.
Yes, so it's open now.
Get involved. Sounds like a great idea. NAIDOC celebrations planned for January.
They are the 29th of January, so it's a Saturday, and it will be an afternoon, 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., so we're hoping for a hot, balmy afternoon because we'll be under the gum trees in the showgrounds. Yeah, it's a beautiful spot in the shade of the gum trees, and there's lots of interactive events and activities planned. So please book online through Eventbrite, but we're looking forward to seeing everybody.
I understand there's been a delay in the Clare and Rivertown Hall costings because of the building boom. There's been a struggle to get design works from the architect.
Yes. Building boom and construction boom means architects, even our very local architects, are so busy that they can't even turn their mind to looking at some concepts and ideas and saying, well, I think you need to allocate X number of dollars for an architect to do the full design for this. So, and we need the full design because if council was to make a decision about moving ahead with the work at Riverton or Clare, we have to work out how much it's going to cost, because that's a critical component. Anyway, it's delayed for a couple more months.
And let's finish off with the launch of the Clare Bike Park upgrade, a success. Over 200 people attended and lots of happy children in Clare.
I think you're right. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend, but I do understand that it was very successful, well attended, and I think it will be well utilised into the future, not by just those older children, but also the little ones, because there is a little ride for the little ones that
pump
are just
track.
Starting.
It's pump track.
Oh,
Ellen.
Sorry.
You've got to get the lingo right.
I didn't get
right.
the lingo, so it's a pump track. Yes, there we go. It's a pump track.
No, well, I think it's been a pretty good outcome. They were pretty stoked on the day. And we'll hear more about the Clare Bike Park in just a moment. Thank you, Helen McDonald, the CEO of the Clare and Gilbert Valleys Council. The cost of the bike park and the playground upgrade came to approximately $100,000. The cost of the entire project, which includes the toilets, the playground and the bike park, came to nearly $300,000. To have your say on the Auburn Streetscape Plan, which is open for formal consultation until mid-Feb, or to fill out the survey about the mobile library service, head to the council website where you'll see both topics listed under Latest News. After 18 months of brainstorming, consultations and meetings and design drawings with the Trail Collective and Council, the new and improved Clare Bike Park is now open. It's all thanks to YAC, the Youth Action Committee, who approached Council to fund a new bike park as they deemed the original track to be unsafe. YAC members are stoked with the outcome and I'm sure will be perfecting their jumps and tricks throughout the entire summer holidays.
Zach Muir, I'm from Clare. I love it. Like, compared to what used to be here, it's just so much better. Gives me something to do rather than just be inside. I live really close to it, so it's not far from me, which makes it like a really good opportunity for me to get outside and try something new.
You've been riding bikes for how long?
I only really started at the start of this year, so it's pretty new to me, but I've still learned a lot of stuff, so learn more.
What is it that you like about it?
Just the freedom, like being able to ride with your friends, and just sometimes you get into really open tracks. Like you don't just have to do jumps like what they have here. Like we ride on the racing trail all the time and it's really freedom and stuff.
And so what does this mean for you now that you've got this awesome track here?
It just gives me an opportunity to get outside more and do stuff with my mates and learn new tricks and new opportunities for the future.
Max Heinrich from Clare. Pretty stoked, looks pretty cool and yeah, excited.
So what's the best bit about this track?
Probably that it's like for every skill level, you can do everything on it.
So will you be down here every afternoon?
Most likely.
Riley Hendry and I'm from Clare.
What was the major thing that needed to be included?
Mainly our skill level has been getting better, so the bigger jumps and somewhere for the little kids to ride, because there was an incident on the old track where a parent approached council and said they need to get rid of the jumps because their kid fell off. So it needed to, make sure all skill levels and ages could ride it.
Because you've got the bike park and then you've got the pump track. So tell me, what's the difference between the two?
The bike park is for, like, the jumps and the tricks, and the pump track is for any skill level, really. And it's just corners and bumps to roll around on.
And it's only bikes. You can't ride scooters, can you?
No scooters, because it will ruin the track and make ruts. And
so do you guys, as part of YAC, have to maintain it?
It's really a community job to maintain it, as like watering the jumps to keep them in good condition, and just watching out for people on scooters and just telling parents like not built for this track, and community really.
Chloe Gogol, the Youth Development Officer of the Clare and Gilbert Valley Council area. So this has been, I think around 18 months that we've been working on this. So originally a couple of the YAC members come to me and they said, the bike park's really not very good. It's not really very user-friendly. We'd love to upgrade it. Is there any way that we can do that? And I said, yeah, sure, let's go to the council and let's see what they think. Originally there was no funding for it, so it wasn't going to happen. And then we were fortunate enough that council was able to get a grant for it. And that's where it all started. And we've been talking to different developers for tracks and things, and that's how we come across the Trail Collective. And it's been a process of showing them our ideas and then them coming back with some drawings and then some community consult questionnaires going out to the community. What do people want?
and now we've got this incredible track 18 months later, which is just amazing.
Have you been happy with the process?
Yeah, it's been interesting and a long time coming, but, you know, that's just part of being involved in a big project, and at the end of the day, we couldn't be more thrilled with what's come out of it.
Tell me a bit about YAC, which is obviously what's driven this.
Yeah, so YAC is the Youth Action Committee in our council region. They're a group of young volunteers between the ages of 12 and 25, and we meet sort of once a fortnight or once a month, depending on what's happening, and they come with ideas of things that we can make our region better for young people and more exciting for young people. And we go, okay, is this realistic? Is it achievable? We talk about how we can do it, the pros and cons, finance, all that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, go from there. And that's how this project come about, because a couple of the young ones in YAC said, you know, we'd love to upgrade the park. And yeah, 18 months later, here we are, and it's incredible.
Was there a stage where the bike park was going to be closed down?
Not closed down, but about 18 months ago, there was some topsoil put on and the young ones didn't think it was very safe because it wasn't compacted down, and they said they were doing jumps and whatnot, and then they were literally just falling off because they were hitting soft gravel. So, that is sort of what got the program going.
Great that you've got jumps for older kids and then you've got this pump track for the younger ones.
Yeah, so we wanted the track to be really inclusive and, you know, people at all ages and all abilities to be able to get involved. When the skate park opened however many years ago, I was one of the casualties with a broken arm, so I think I'll stick to the pump track and not be hitting the big jumps. The pump track is nice for me.
Now that there's this awesome track here, is there going to be events that are going to be staged here? What's the goal?
Yeah, well, we would love to have different events here. I mean, it's a great space, and we've got great plans for how we can continue to make this space even better. But now that we've got a water source here, really, we can hold youth events. That'll be great. You know, maybe even lighting would be fantastic. And then we can hold evening things and have, you know, local DJs and stuff like that. You know, all those kinds of things are what YAC are all about. And hopefully in the near future, we'll be able to start doing some of those things here.
What's the next project for YAC? You've been working on this for 18 months. What's the next one?
Yeah, so there's a few things that YAC are working on. Two projects are, for about the last 12 months, we've been talking about buying an outdoor cinema that will travel around our council district, and it'll be free movie nights because we want everyone to be able to come along, and it'll go to all the different towns, but we've had rejection after rejection with grants, so we're still, you know, working through that process. That's one thing that we're really keen on. And the other thing is a program called Wheels in Motion, and that's for disadvantaged young people, who don't have a parent that they can drive with or have the funds to be able to do their hours on their learners, so 75 hours of driving with a qualified adult. So, yeah, we're going through that process of trying to get that program up and running too, which will be awesome for our young people, because if you don't have a car and a license, you can't have a job. So, yeah, that'll be really beneficial for our young people. I just think that we should be so proud of these young guys. I mean, to come up with an idea like this and have the courage to go to council and say, can we do this? This is something that we really want. And I think, you know, the YAC is an awesome advocate for our young people. They've got so many different ideas and things that they want to do, literally just to benefit other young people. That's all they care about, which is incredible.
How many kids are involved with YAC?
So currently there's 10, five who were actively involved in this upgrade, but we're always looking for more young people. And if you want to get involved, it's just a matter of reaching out to myself or one of the YAC members and saying, you know, when's the next meeting? Can I come along? And it's always a yes. We're more than happy to have anyone between the ages of 12 and 25 join us.
And I think the parents have also given the new development a thumbs up.
Mark Hendry from Clare. Oh, it's great. Somewhere for the kids to ride their bikes. It's really good getting involved in the process of grants and everything else. So it's going to be something really exciting for the kids to come and ride.
Barry Heinrich, I'm from Clare, and I've got two kids that ride here and kept them fairly busy with the processes of when they were building the tracks and all the meetings they've been to, and kids thoroughly enjoy being out here.
So do you think you'll see them much now that this is all done and dusted?
No, I don't think so. I don't think novelty's going to wear off in any time soon, and the tricks are just getting bigger and bigger for them, and yeah, it's good to see what they can come up with.
Some of the parents watching their kids having a ball on the new bike park that was officially opened earlier this month. And please remember, no scooters. Let's head back to Auburn, because not only is the main street getting a facelift, so too is the southern entrance of the town. a giant steel sculpture has been erected. It's an 8 metre A for Auburn. The late Alan Farwell, a local Auburn resident, bequeathed $64,000 to the town on the condition it was spent on establishing a Southern Gateway statement. And it sure does make a statement. For the last 4 years, a small group of volunteers have honoured Alan's request. And just before Christmas, on Friday the 17th of December, with much excitement and anticipation, it all came to fruition. Councillor Elizabeth Calvert, who's also a committee member of the Auburn Southern Gateway Project, is so thrilled with the outcome.
Oh, so excited, so excited. It's been 4 years in the making, writing grants, submitting them, waiting for decisions, and I just couldn't believe it when we got the FRRR grant that made it all, and that added to Alan Farwell's bequest for a Southern Gateway entrance statement.
Okay, let's take a step back and find out how this all began in the first place.
Well, Alan Farwell wanted to have a Southern Gateway entrance to the town that he loved so much. He was so passionate about Auburn and he loved the community and the people. And he had a terminal illness, so he decided that he would leave a bequest. And he asked Graham Richards to manage the whole project. So that's what we did.
And he had that request on his deathbed, I understand?
He did. And it came to a big surprise for Graham, but he took up the challenge and gathered some people around him.
How much money?
It was 64,000, yes.
How often do you hear of someone from the community leaving that amount of money to their town?
I haven't heard of it before, but I know obviously sometimes there has been bequests, but it just makes so much difference to small rural and regional communities, because to get all the money from a grant would have been very difficult, because usually it's dollar for dollar, and so it can be very hard for projects.
Why do you think it was so important for Alan to have this type of project erected, like a sculpture at the entrance to Auburn?
Well, it's announcing, hey, you're in Auburn. Come on in. We welcome you. And come and see what's so fantastic to see and do in Auburn and surrounding communities, because there is so much here. And it was very important to him.
Tell me a bit about Alan. For those people that aren't from Auburn and are listening to this, what role did Alan play in this community?
Well, Alan, he was on the ACDC. He was very involved in the arts. And he was just here as a fantastic community member. He was part of Auburn, and that's very important.
So it's a big A as you enter Auburn, and we'll hear more about the actual project and the sculpture in just a moment with the artist. Mm. Was there any requests by Alan before he died of what he didn't want?
He was very clear about that. I wasn't privy to that. He was very clear with Graham what he didn't want anything boring. I can tell you that. I'm sure of that, knowing Alan.
I understand he didn't want a bottle of wine or a bunch of grapes.
Exactly, because all the wine regions have that. And he wanted Auburn to stand out. And with an 8 metre tall sculpture, it's going to stand out.
So tell me about the process. It's been, as you said, it's been 4 years in the making, so I presume there's been lots of community consultation. The community has had a lot of input into this.
Yes. Actually, we held a Auburn Community Development Committee, held a community meeting, and the artist Craig Andre was there as well. He presented two concepts and talked about them, and then there was a vote, and it was overwhelmingly for the big A.
Alan bequeathed $64,000, but obviously the sculpture's taken on, it costs a lot more than that, and you've had to get funding through different grants. What was the process like?
Long and torturous, as with any grant writing. I wrote the grant, and we submitted it to two arts organisations and weren't successful. And then we submitted it to FRRR, which is the Foundation for Rural and Regional Development, and we were lucky, and we got that grant, which meant, and of course, we put some money into it as well. and it all started.
So how much money did this whole project cost?
This project came in at $93,496.
And any fundraising from the community as well?
No, that wasn't necessary, so we've done it.
And I understand that everyone that's contributed to this particular project business-wise has all been local.
Yes, it has. And we've had fantastic suppliers and contractors. Like we had Clear Metal Fabrication have done the stainless steel sculptor. We've had Clear Quarries doing all the earthworks. J.C. Gills, who are earth movers and concreters. And I'm trying to think who else. Sorry, you've caught me on there. But, you know, but it's all been fantastic. And even the neighbour, Nick Agostino, took his fence down so we could have easier access to the site. Everybody's contributed it. Look, they trimmed their prices. So that was great.
What do you think of the Big A?
I love it. I love it. You know, I mean, there isn't anything like it.
And to me, there's a vision. I mean, people travel around to visit the big things in Australia, you know. So, hey, we might get them here. But also, we're the gateway to the Flinders Ranges up here. So there's going to be a lot of things happening. So, yeah, it's just, oh, look, it's just wonderful, Annabelle.
And do you think Alan will be pretty impressed with this?
Oh, I mean, I know he's looking down now. He's saying to us, keep away from the crane.
Award-winning Adelaide artist Craig Andre designed this curiously unconventional sculpture. I caught up with him as we watched the crane slowly erect the Big A.
I've watched a few sculptures or large structures go in, so I've got my fingers crossed for the boys installing. Hopefully it's going to all register for them.
So explain what the sculpture looks like.
Well, if you get it lining up correctly as you kind of enter Auburn, what it forms is a really big capital A, you know, like A for Auburn, but it's comprised of two components. So as you kind of come past it, the A disappears. It kind of fragments and it just becomes a bit more abstract. And that's where it becomes a bit more of a sculptural form. And, you know, what I liked about that is that it's just not completely obvious. There's a few things going on there and it makes people think and, you know, ask a question, what's going on here? What's this about? You know?
So it makes a statement.
Well, hopefully.
That's the whole point, isn't it?
Yes, that is right. It's, you know, an entry statement needs to make a statement. But also, you know, in talking with Graham, who was instrumental in getting me involved in this project, and with the committee, you know, they were very aspirational. They wanted a work that was dynamic, forward-thinking, looking to the future, not something that just summed up what the town used to be 100 years ago or where it come from, but where it may be, where it's going. And so that's what I sort of took on board when I thought of the ideas. And this is one idea of a few that we kind of ran through, you know, and sort of suggested.
Tell me a bit about your background. You're from Adelaide, but for those people who aren't familiar with your work, what works have you done that most people would be familiar with in Adelaide?
The one work that's really popular amongst most people, which is lovely because you don't know whether the work's going to be popular or not, but it's a work called Spectrum and it's on Osmond Terrace in Norwood, and that was commissioned by the council about 10, 11 years ago, and that's a series of seven stainless steel rings that have got sort of stories inside of them, and the tallest ring is 5 metres tall, the smallest is about 3, I think. So that's a very well received piece. So from initial viewing, it's very abstract, just a series of rings, but then if you come up closer, you know, there's a little bit more going on, there's some stories and so on. So that was a great work.
Is there a story with the A?
Well, the A is, again, I just loved how it all lined up. You know, my last name's Andre, so it starts with A.
Alan who gave the money.
Alan who gave the money, yeah. Auburn, you know, and it just goes on. So I just think that was really nice. That's a nice little tie-in. And, you know, I thought about, you know, do I bring in more things? But given the location and it's an entry statement, it's not really a space where you can pull off and investigate up closely. It's all about that vehicular experience. You're coming in, making a big statement and welcoming you, saying, hey, you're entering Auburn. So that's the main focus, yeah.
You've been working on this piece for so long. It's finally the day where everyone gets to see what your pride and joy. Is there an element of absolute exhilaration?
Maybe that mixed with terror, you know, in case we got the drawings wrong and it doesn't line up. You know, you have a little moment where you go, did we get that right? You know, because we did draw it all. It's all been drawn on the computer. And so in theory, it all lines up. But until it gets put up, you know, we're not going to know.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
We're going to finish off the podcast with a chat about what council does in regards to recycling and what happens to all the materials once they leave the local waste transfer station. And disposable face masks. People still aren't doing the right thing and cutting the e-loops before they dispose into the bins. They are a hazard to wildlife. I caught up briefly with Ken Dolan, the council's Director of Works and Infrastructure, to find out more.
We've got general streams such as metals, organic waste, electronic waste, cardboard, glass. We've even got things like concrete, so we can, for small quantities of concrete and brick where that material can be recycled. We've got oil and oily waste that can be recycled as well. So there's quite a wide range across the transfer station that people can avail of.
What about recycling items such as masks and telephones and batteries?
Masks are relatively new for us to be able to deal with in the volumes that we're doing, but we'd actively encourage everyone to use a reusable mask where practical and where possible. And there's a lot of little businesses now that are manufacturing, local business that are manufacturing masks that we can pick up. But in those situations where a single-use mask is the only option that people have, when we're finished, they need to go into the general waste bin, into landfill. Unfortunately, there's no way to recycle those products just yet. But the important thing is we just ask everyone to cut the loops, the ear loops that attach them to your face, because those loops can be a problem for wildlife.
And are people cutting those loops, though?
We're not seeing a whole lot of that at the moment, but we have asked over the last number of weeks for people to do it, and I think it is getting better, and the signs are positive, but we just need to reinforce that message. It'd be really great for people to just get on board and make sure that we get those loops cut.
What about phones? I guess that comes under the electronic waste side of things?
Absolutely. So the electronic waste bin that we have up there is a container that can take phones, televisions, old video recorders, DVRs, PlayStations, and a whole wide range of electronic and electric waste. We have a good arrangement with another company then that takes all of that electronic waste and breaks it into its component parts. So there's a number of people employed, another industry, break all of these electronic devices down into their component parts so that all of the various bits can be recycled and diverted off to the appropriate facilities.
And batteries. People shouldn't be delivering batteries to the waste transfer station. There are other opportunities or there are other places that they should do that.
Absolutely. So the waste transfer station doesn't necessarily pick up batteries. However, there's a number of sites around town. I think we've got the Richard Elkery's Pharmacy, we've got Lifeline, IGA at Auburn. So there's quite a number of different options, and I think there's more information on our website which will be able to point people to where those locations are.
What are some of your problem waste issues that needs to be addressed, which would surprise many people?
There's two main problem areas that we have in terms of the type of waste. One would be mattresses. It's very, very difficult to recycle a mattress and very expensive to recycle a mattress.
Why is it expensive and difficult to recycle a mattress?
The amount of labour required to tear the mattress down. So you've got to break it into its component parts. You've got to take the outer layer off. Some of the flock material that's in there can be recycled. If the springs are steel, they can be recycled. But all of those have to be separated. So the cost is all about tearing it down into its constituent parts. And that's where the cost comes in. So for council, for every mattress, it would probably be, you know, between $40 and $50 per mattress to get each one torn down. So if we're looking at taking in hundreds of mattresses a year across the district, that turns into quite a significant outlay for council.
You said hundreds of mattresses per year could be delivered to the waste transfer station, but not all of those are recycled, I understand, because you possibly can't do that. So do the rest of them go into landfill?
Absolutely. That's our only option as a cost-effective option for council, is to get these into landfill.
And are there other council areas that are charging people for mattress recycling?
Yeah, quite a lot of council areas are charging, and that can be anything up to $50 per mattress for a collection fee.
And what issues does that cause if you start charging people for that?
We'd really like to make sure that all of those mattresses are dealt with appropriately, and I suppose putting a charge in place can encourage people to do the wrong thing. And yes, I've seen in other council areas where there have been mattresses dumped on the side of the road, and that's not an outcome that is desirable.
And permapine posts, that's another issue.
Yeah, and I guess in a wine district, there's a lot of pine posts, the permapine posts that are used every year, and they have a certain lifespan. And at the end of their lifespan, people need to get rid of them. It's not something that is ideal to be collecting at the transfer station, but we do offer that service. And it does lead to quite a significant cost as well, because each of those posts have to be transported in a truck, in a licensed vehicle, because it is treated as a hazardous waste because of the previous treatment of that wood. So there is a licensed haulage fee that to get it over as far as the landfill, which would be over at Inkerman, and then there's also a fee for the depositing of those CCA posts at the landfill site, and there's an EPA levy, so it is quite an expensive proposition.
So coming into Christmas, what's some of the issues that you're faced with when it comes to recycling? One, I presume, would be people not putting the right things in a recycling bin.
Absolutely. And it's one of the things we really want to try and encourage everyone is to take the extra minute and look at the various options that are available for recycling. I know everybody's in a hurry around Christmas time and there's lots and lots of things to do. But as I mentioned earlier, the transfer station is there to help with recycling and reduce landfill. And what we don't want to have is everybody putting all of the recyclables into the general waste, which ends up in landfill.
Well, thank you very much, Ken, for joining me on the Clare Valley podcast and keeping us up to date with the world of recycling in the Clare Valley and Gilbert Valley area. Thank you.
Thank you.
For further information about anything we discussed on this podcast, head to the podcast show notes where you'll find all the links. Also, if there's a subject you would like the podcast to cover, please let us know or contact Council directly. The recycling topic was recommended by a member of the public, so I am loving your suggestions. This podcast is brought to you by the Clare and Gilbert Valleys Council. I'm your host, Annabelle Homer. Catch you next time for another episode of the Clare Valley Podcast.